The following is a Sunday feast lecture on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 8, text number 16, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on December 16th, 2012, in Lanesha, South Africa.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Abrahma Bhuvana Loka. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka. Punar Avartinorjana. Mamupecha Dukonteya. Punar Janmana Vidyate. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka. Punar Arvartinarjuna. Mam Upecha Dukonteya. Punar Janmana Vidyate. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest. All are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place, but one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. Purport. All kinds of yogis, karma, jnana, hatha, etc., eventually have to attain devotional perfection in bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness before they can go to Krishna's transcendental abode and never return. Those who attain the highest material planets, the planets of the demigods, are again subjected to repeated birth and death. As persons on earth are elevated to higher planets, people on higher planets such as Brahmalok, Chandralok, and Indralok fall down to earth. The practice of sacrifice called Panchagni Vidya, recommended in the Chandyoga Upanishad, enables one to achieve Brahmaloka, but if on Brahmaloka one does not cultivate Krishna consciousness, then he must return to earth. Those who progress in Krishna consciousness on the higher planets are gradually elevated to higher and higher planets, and at the time of universal devastation are transferred to the eternal spiritual kingdom. Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, quotes this verse, Brahmanas sahate sarve samprapte prati sanchare parasyante kritatmana Pravishanti Parampadam. When there is devastation of this material universe, Brahma and his devotees, who are constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness, are all transferred to the spiritual universe and to specific spiritual planets according to their desires.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganitanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine.
So, the question that I am often asked, why is God so cruel that He makes this world a world of suffering? Why can't He make it a happy place, this material world? This is very many times I'm asked this question. Why is He so mean and nasty to make this world so mean and nasty? It's like a kid, you see, he runs away from home, right? And he's saying, why are my parents so nasty that life on the street is so hellish? Why are my parents so cruel that life on the street is so hellish? Idiot, why don't you just go home again? You know, why are you out on the street? It's your stupidity, it's your foolishness. Your parents haven't put you in a hellish condition, you put yourself in a hellish condition, you see. So don't blame God for your suffering, that's the first thing. Neophyte devotees often do that. They want to blame God for their suffering. Krishna, why are you doing this to me? Don't you know I'm chanting my japa? Why did I get laid off from my job? I mean, I'm following the principles. Krishna, why are you doing this to me? You see? Don't chastise Krishna. That's the first rule. Don't chastise Krishna. As soon as you start blaming Krishna for your suffering, your sorrows, your difficulties, you're just tightening the knot of your own misery is all you're doing. Don't blame Krishna for your suffering. Please, don't do that. Blame yourself. You may say, well, I don't want to blame myself, you know, because I'm pretty proud. I'm a proud peacock and I wouldn't want to blame myself. But, you know, that wouldn't be too cool for a proud peacock to blame himself for his own suffering. But actually, that's just what we need to do. We need to take the responsibility for our suffering situation on ourselves. It's my fault. It's my stupidity. I'm the one that made the mistake, you see. That's the beginning of liberation. You see, when you take the responsibility for your suffering condition, that's the beginning of liberation. Because then you're starting to see things properly as they are in the proper perspective. As long as we don't put ourselves in the responsible position for our suffering, we are simply prolonging the illusion. You see, we're prolonging illusion. The way to come out of suffering is you have to come out of illusion. Those things go hand in hand, you see. Ignorance and illusion, enlightenment and bliss, you see. Satchitananda vigraha, you see. Eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. So the more you know, the more you're blissful, and the more you're in illusion, the more you suffer. So even at the beginning, becoming out of illusion puts us into more suffering. It's good and it's okay. You see? I may go along in a false sense of happiness. in a state of illusion, saying, well, please don't pop my little bubble of happiness, you know, and tell me this mature world's a miserable place. I mean, I have a job, I have a girlfriend, I got a really nice car, I got a first-class stereo set, and don't tell me this mature world's a place of mystery. You see? But actually, we have to see things as they are. That's the first step in self-realization. You have to see things as they are. Tamasima Jyotirmama, Jyotirgama. Come out of the darkness, come into the light. You see? Even if the light's a little scary in the beginning, that's okay. We'll get used to it. You know, I'm actually responsible. This is my karma. All these things that are happening, it's because I did something bad in the past. Don't tell me that. No, that's just what we need to hear. Even though it's uncomfortable in the beginning to really know the true facts about how much rascals we really are, that's what we need to hear. Because that understanding, that realization, that conception, that true conception we can have of our present position will purify our consciousness. And in that purified consciousness, then we can connect with our actual identities as eternal blissful beings. You see? There's different stages of competence. The first stage is called conscious, or rather unconscious, incompetence. I don't realize what a rascal I am. I think I'm really great. But I'm constantly making this mistake and that mistake. I'm doing this wrong and that wrong. I think I'm really great. You see? That's called unconscious incompetence. I don't realize what a fool and a rascal I am. You see? The next stage is conscious incompetence. And now I become actually aware. You know, I'm really a rascal. I mean, I was an eternal servant of Krishna and his kingdom, but I was envious of the Lord, so much so that I came and took birth here in this material world to try to be a separate Lord than Krishna, a competitive Lord with Krishna, you see. So now, you see, now I'm consciously incompetent. So that's very important. We become conscious of our incompetence. This is why the spiritual master's duty and the parent's duty is to chastise the disciple and the child, you see. Because if otherwise, the illusion is never broken that I am great, I am perfect, I am wonderful. I am God's gift to South Africa, you see. You see. So, from conscious incompetence, then you can go to conscious competence. You can gradually learn, you see, how to become proper in your behavior and your consciousness. You see, we take shelter of the process, we read Prabhupada's books, we follow the instructions, we accept a spiritual master, we receive personal guidance from the spiritual master, the senior devotees are always there to guide us. So in this way, we gradually learn, we go through a stage called anartana vritti, where all those unwanted dirts are gradually washed out of the heart. That lust, you see, that anger, that greed, that madness, that illusion, that envy, all these ghosts of material desire that have haunted us for millions and billions of lifetimes, gradually they're exorcised from our consciousness, being replaced with transcendental Krishna consciousness. Instead of becoming lusty for the opposite sex, we can become lusty for devotional service. Give me more service. Please, give me more service. I want more service. please keep me engaged 24 hours a day in serving Krishna. You see? You become lusty for bhakti, greedy. You see? Actually, Rupa Goswami says you must become greedy. You want bhakti, you must become very, very greedy for bhakti. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati kriyatam yadi kutopalabhyate tattala yang apimoyamekalam janmakoti sukritayar nalabhyate. He says pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness cannot be obtained even by executing pious activities in hundreds and millions of lives. It can only be achieved by paying one price, tattalalyam, intense greed to obtain it. And if it is available somewhere, one must purchase it without delay. So where is it available? Where is that place that dispenses bhakti? That is Prabhupada's movement. Prabhupada's movement is that place where you can purchase bhakti. Come with your pockets full of greed. You see, a wallet full of greed. A bank, a charge card fully loaded with greed for bhakti, you see. Come very greedy for bhakti. You see. I must. Why is bhakti so important? Because bhakti is the only way you get Krishna. And actually, there's a wonderful purport, another verse here in the Gita. It's so amazing purport. Prabhupada is saying how the Mahatmas, they don't even desire to go to the spiritual world. All they want is Krishna's association. You're saying, what? I thought you had to go to the spiritual world to get Krishna's association. But it's very clear in that purport. Mahatmas are associating with Krishna in the material world and the spiritual world. Doesn't matter, you see. The Mahatmas are associating with Krishna at every minute, you see. So that is what you get. If you have bhakti, you get the association of Krishna. And Krishna's association is unparalleled. Within anywhere within the material world or the spiritual world, there's no competition. He's the supreme superstar. There's no one who can compete with Krishna. I mean, nobody's that good looking, really. You know, nobody's that rich. Nobody's that famous. Nobody's that powerful. And above all, he's renounced. He's humble. He's not puffed up. He likes to give the credit to his devotees. He's more happy to see his devotees worshipped than himself being worshipped. I mean, you consider all the qualities of Krishna. I mean, it's just amazing that here's the most powerful, beautiful, wealthy, famous, everything person. At the same time, he's the most humble, most renounced of all people. I mean, that's really an unbelievable combination. And that combination is found in only one person in all of existence, and that is Krishna, Shamsundar. Now you know why Radharani is so in love with Krishna. Because there's nobody like Krishna. There's nobody like Krishna. There's nobody like Krishna. And you can have him also as your associate eternally. You have to pay, you simply have to have bhakti, and you simply have to have greed for bhakti. Is it? Being a good guy isn't enough, or a good girl isn't enough. Being a well-respected member of this kind is not enough. You have to have that greed for Krishna. I want Krishna and I want only Krishna and nothing but Krishna. That's my only desire. You see? Ye yata mang prapadyante tang tutaiva bhajam yaham. Inasmuch as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. How much Krishna do you want, Prabhu? How much Krishna do you want, Madhaji? How much Krishna do you want? A little tiny itsy bitsy teeny weeny fragment of Krishna, or do you want full Krishna? You see, when you come to the Sunday love feast, do you want one grain of rice, or do you want a full plate? How much Krishna do we want? You see, we get according to our degree of surrender, in accordance with our greed for Krishna. He rewards us. He wants to give himself in full, actually. That's his desire. But he will only do so if we're ready for it. You see? He doesn't reveal himself to every Tom, Dick, or Harry that walks in off the street in Malaysia, South Africa. You see? It's according to your intense desire to have Krishna as your beloved Lord, according to your desire, you see. It's not a group thing, it's an individual thing. Each devotee, he reciprocates individually with that devotee according to that devotee's degree of surrender. And Krishna gives us a wonderful hint in the ninth chapter, text number 22. If we fully give ourselves to him, what he will do for us. For those who worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. You know what Prabhupada said about that verse? Prabhupada said, Krishna will personally deliver to your door whatever you need. You say, well, wow, I've been chanting my rounds for so many years and following the principles. I didn't see Krishna come to my door. Is that verse hype? No. No. Note the word exclusive. That's the catch. Those who worship me with exclusive devotion. We chant Hare Krishna, but then we're thinking, you know, so many other things, isn't it? We think Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. We think, well, eating, sleeping, mating, offending, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You see? Our consciousness is mixed. Therefore, we don't get that degree of reciprocation that Krishna describes in that verse. So therefore, a clarification of consciousness is required. That's why we have this daily rut, 16 rounds, at least 16 rounds of japa. Prabhupada actually, Shuddha Kirti Prabhu told, he was with Prabhupada as his servant. Actually, Prabhupada was making fun of us when he said this. He said, he was chanting, he said, okay, now I finished my 16 rounds. He said, now I can do any damn thing I want. He put his beads down. You see? Prabhupada was making fun of us, our mood, you see. I was recently in Vrindavan where it's a very inspiring place. You can get so many realizations when you're in Vrindavan because you're right there with Krishna at every minute in Vrindavan. His pastimes are going on, especially in Ramanreti, you see. Or our temple is, that's a place of Krishna's pastimes. His pastimes are still going on at every minute there, you see. So it's a very powerful place, our Krishna Balaram temple. Krishna's pastimes are happening in the courtyard at every minute. And not in the whole area. All the ashrams, like I live across the street in the MVT. And I've stayed there when I'm in Robinson. Krishna's pastimes are happening there too. So it's a very powerful place. So I found, I was doing some reading of a letter that Prabhupada had written to a couple of boys in Japan who were not devotees, but they really liked Krishna consciousness so much that they wrote Prabhupada a letter. And Prabhupada was advising them to chant all the time Hare Krishna. He said, when you're riding in the bus, when you're walking down the street, you're doing something with your hands, when you're taking bath, when you're going to take rest, always chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So I was thinking, wow, this is an amazing instruction. If one actually did this, what kind of reciprocation would one get from Krishna? So I was fascinated by the idea, but my mind said, nope, don't do it. I mean, you've done your rounds. Let's not get carried away here. Give me some freedom. I like to, my mind was saying, I love to space out, you know. Don't you dare do this because I won't be able to space out anymore. The mind was complaining like this, you see. So I said, mind, you know, forget it. I mean, Prabhupada knows better than you. So let's, mind, you're going to have to just put up with it because I'm going to do more chanting. While I'm walking down the road, while I'm taking a bath, while I'm doing something with my hands, I'm going to do more and more chanting. And it was that in any even a little increase in chanting yields tremendous, tremendous results in one's consciousness. Try it. You'll like it. Finish your rounds and then keep chanting. While you're doing this, while you're doing that, while you're cutting vegetables, while you're driving down the street. I'm not saying you have to do it on your beads. You can do it with the beads or without the beads. Either one. Probably that if you're doing something in your hands, that means that obviously it wasn't in the bead bang. It was just on the lips while you're, you know, doing something, you know. So it's very nice. The more we can increase our chanting of Hare Krishna, the result is because Krishna and Krishna's name are non-different, and Krishna is the supreme enchanter of the mind. That's why he's called Manahar, the enchanter of the mind. The more you will chant, the more you become enchanted by Krishna. And the more you are enchanted by Krishna, the less you will be enchanted by Maya. In other words, we've been having a love affair with Maya for many, many lifetimes, you see. Oh, my dear Maya Devi, you see. She's been our beloved girlfriend, you see. For many, many millions of births. Maya, we're breaking up, that's it. I've had enough. Actually, Maya won't be hurt. It's this guy, Maya or Durga Devi, you see. She's known as Durga. All people worship her as Durga, described in the Brahma Samhita. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati describes, even though we've been serving Durga, we've been under her grip for all these millions of lifetimes, and we take up Krishna Bhakti, she becomes very pleased. So don't worry that if I stop worshiping Durga that I'm going to get cursed. Just take up Krishna Bhakti as your only business 24 hours a day. Take up Krishna Bhakti as your only business 24 hours a day, and I guarantee you, you'll be living in the spiritual world at every minute, associating with Krishna. So this is the wonderful process that Srila Prabhupada has given us. And are there any questions? So they're writing questions down? Okay. All right, so I'll keep talking until a few more questions are written down. This birth guarantees punar janma na vidyate, never takes birth again. So some people think that then how you could ever fall from the spiritual world, because it says that once you attain the Maya abode, you never take birth again. Some people are confused by that. Think, well, it says you never take birth again, so how you could fall in the first place? Krishna guarantees the one who attains the Maya abode never takes birth again. Well, what does again mean? It means a second time. He said, I'm not going to do that again. Again means a second time. Krishna doesn't say those who are in my abode never take birth in this material world. He doesn't say that. You see, he says those who return to my abode after being here, they won't take birth again. So this verse does not in any way say that one cannot fall down from the spiritual world. It says you won't fall a second time from the spiritual world. That's an important distinction. As they're saying in America, once burned, twice shy. The little kid may stick his hand in the fire once, but will he do it again? Mm-mm. Out of curiosity. Oh, look at that beautiful blue flame up there on the stove. Mommy says I shouldn't touch it, but why is she not saying? It's like the forbidden fruit, you know, in the Garden of Eden, you know. Wow, it looks so beautiful. That beautiful flame up there, it's so pretty. And why mommy says no? I really want to touch it. Why mommy's being so mean to me? She won't let me touch that flame. So when mommy goes out of the kitchen, he won't do it again. Is he? So the idea of being God is the forbidden fruit. You see, described in the Bible, the forbidden apple. That was the forbidden apple. The forbidden apple is you can enjoy as much as you want, but you can't be God. That's one thing you're not allowed. You're not allowed to be the supreme personality of Godhead. You can enjoy any way you want. The kalpa vriksha trees will satisfy all your desires, whatever you want. But there's one desire you're not allowed to have, and that's to be Krishna. You see? It's the blue flame for the little kid. Oh, I can have, mother says I can have whatever I want, but I can't touch that blue flame. You see? So the forbidden fruit is there, the forbidden, you know. So, some foolish living entity is a very infinitesimal number. Misuse the free will and they take breath. So the questions are written down now. Okay, more coming. The easiest way is to have a number of sheets of paper, and everybody has their own sheet. You know, to pass it around, because people back there don't have any, have nothing to write on. Yeah, here we go. Okay, some questions. Good. Hearing about our suffering as a reality of our misdeeds can place us in a negative frame of mind, since it would appear like an endless ocean of suffering. How to remain positive? You see? The positive thing is you're actually in control of your own destiny. Prabhupada says man is the architect of his own destiny. That's the positive. It's very positive. You see, you're not just being whimsically tossed on the waves of karma. It's under your control. Whether you want to act in accordance with the will of the Lord or out of accordance with the will of the Lord, it's completely under your control. What this says is you are the architect of your own destiny. You're not fated to suffer in this material world. That's not your fate, unless you choose to make it your fate. You have the freedom to either suffer or taste unlimited happiness in pure bhakti. You're completely under your power. There's nothing negative about this. By misdeeds you're suffering, now by proper deeds of devotion you can get free of all suffering. Actually, Prabhupada explains that they don't like, the reason they don't want to accept that future life is, they don't want to take karma because then they feel it's hopeless. But if you actually hear the message of the Lord and as spoken by Vaishnavas, by Guru, if you hear the actual message explained to you properly by someone who actually knows the science, it's not all negative. I admit, in the beginning, Hare Krishna people seem rather negative to me. I remember at that time I was a musician, and I had these really flashy pants that someone gave me. They're made out like a quilt. You know, you take a quilt with different patches, and really the most flashy pants you'd ever seen. You walk down the street, and everybody look. The whole city block. Everybody look at you. I mean, as musicians, you know, want to attract attention. So. And then I was with the devotees, and when Brahma Srini said, "See, those pants are sense gratification." And I was thinking, oh, these devotees are so negative, you know. So I know what you're saying here. I went through it myself. I think these people are so negative, you know. can't enjoy life, you know. But then I spent time associating with one very, very blissful and enlivened, enlightened devotee named His Holiness Vishnu Janaswami. And he wasn't wearing flashy pants. Although he previously wore so many costumes before he became a devotee. He was a musician in San Francisco. So he now he was dressed as a simple sannyasi. And he was really blissful. I mean, he was really blissful. And just Prabhupada even confirmed in a letter that we were there in Austin. A letter came to him from Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, when you were leading the kirtan in Los Angeles, I felt how I was being carried to Vaikuntha. So you can imagine what kind of, how nectarian it was to be with him in those intimate Mangal Artis. We had, that time we had no drum, no kartals, no harmonium. All we had was Vishnu Janaswami clapping his hands. None of us knew how to offer the arti even. So he would offer the arti and sing Garvastakam prayers. He led the arti and the kirtan at the same time. And we were all just completely, you know, brand new. Off the streets, recruit. And it was awesome. So what I had met the devotees previously in San Francisco and Berkeley, and I couldn't relate to their philosophy and all their rules and regulations. But now I met someone who was really, really tasting the nectar, and just being around him, you would taste nectar just by his presence. Just by hearing his kirtan, immediately you would taste nectar, you see. So that gave me a whole other vision of Krishna consciousness. By coming in contact with a person who was situated, even though he talked about the suffering in the material world, he was beyond it. And by being with him, you became beyond it. So next question, how do we know that all this is real? Krishna consciousness gives up the process to go back home, back to Godhead. But what if at the time of death, nothing happened? I remember I was one time told, and I was preaching at the University of Florida, when one youth came up to me and he said, everything is an illusion. That's Buddhist philosophy, by the way. Everything's an illusion. So I was thinking, well, what if that were true? I mean, see, I was always a philosophical thinker. What if it was true that everything's an illusion? But then I thought, well, but then this is the best illusion. I mean, you know, I've tried all the other illusions, and this is the best one. I mean, this illusion makes me ecstatic. So even if it is an illusion, this is the best one. But of course, it's not. But then you can take it a step further. If someone says everything is an illusion, then their statement is an illusion. Because it's part of everything. So you tell me everything, nothing is real. I say, oh, okay. Then your that statement isn't real either. So it has no validity. You see? So, you know, there are many ways you can defeat these kind of, you know, these devious philosophies that try to attack the Vaishnava Siddhanta. There are many, many ways they can be defeated logically and scripturally. But the real bottom line is, you won't, if you actually follow this process, you will wake up with Krishna in the spiritual world. If someone says, how do you know Krishna is real? Well, how do you know Malaysia, South Africa is real? You experience it, don't you? You experience it because you're here. You know it's real. So let's say I have some friend, he doesn't believe there's any place called Malaysia, South Africa. He's just been hyping me. I don't believe that there's such a place. No, I'll bring you here and you can see it. Here it is, Lanesha. Now, it's real. I'm here. I can see it. I can experience it, so I know it's real. So in the same way, you can know that Krishna is real by actually following this process, according to the recipe. And then you will meet Krishna face to face. Prabhupada ordered me, he said, now you disqualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. So the fact is that if you follow this process, you will directly meet Krishna. You'll realize your eternal relationship with him. Everything will be there. And then you'll be convinced, oh yes, I thought he was God, but now I'm really convinced. I trusted Prabhupada, I trusted my Guru Maharaj, I trusted the devotees. Because it seemed really real to me, it made a perfect sense. And now it's absolutely proven, because here I am in Goloka Vrindavan, and there's the Jamuna, and Govardhan is big here, it's not a little tiny shrunk down thing. Yeah. It's huge, and there's waterfalls coming off Govardhan, there's caves, there's mango trees and papaya trees, the most amazing Govardhan, you see. I'm seeing it. I can run up and down Govardhan with Krishna, and Radharani is there, and the gopas and the it's all real. It wasn't a dream. It's real. This is more real than Lanesha. You see? So if you really want to be convinced, simply follow this process. You see, well, it's like if I say, here's a great recipe for banana bread. Oh, I don't believe it. I mean, no, just try it. Follow the recipe exactly it is given, and you'll see. You'll get some really great banana bread. Just make sure to offer it before you eat it. You recommended that we should chant it all the time, even while driving, cutting vegetables, etc. Is this not inattentive chanting? No, it's not considered inattentive chanting. Otherwise, why would Prabhupada instruct? Now the 16 rounds should be exclusive, nothing else. Just not that I'm, stirring the burfi, Yeah. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. No. Your 16 rounds should be absolutely only chanting and nothing else. And you could walk back and forth to stay awake, but 16 rounds should be exclusively there. But other times, you can chant while you're doing everything. The Prabhupada said, chant while you're taking bath. I mean, it's not inattentive chanting. It's called transcendental bathing. Okay. In light of the verse you just read, why are there two classes of living entities, eternally liberated and eternally conditioned? Prabhupada said, actually, every living entity is eternally liberated. That's the actual position. But sometimes if you're standing on the beach, sometimes the tide will come in and you'll be under the water. The living entity is called Tatastha Shakti. He has the ability, because he's on the border he has a consciousness which can go either way. Even though he's spiritual by nature, he's eternally liberated by his very nature. In order for love to exist, free will must exist, and free will means the choice between matter or spirit. So because his consciousness is situated in a borderline way between the two energies, he can go either way. He may sometimes be under the influence of the material nature. Time doesn't exist in the spiritual world. Completely non-existent there. So even if you're in the material world, when you go back to the spiritual world, there will be no time when you weren't there, because there's no time there. There's no past. So that's why you can be eternally liberated, even though you're a conditioned soul. Because once you go back to Godhead, there's no past, present, and future in that place. So if you're there, you're always there. It's inconceivable, but it's real. It's like you're sitting in the Bhagavatam class and you're not out for a second, but you had this amazing dream that you were Brahma and then you were Indra, and you kept sliding down to Indigopa, and you went through 8,400,000 species, and somebody taps you on the knee, and you wake up again. And you continue with the Bhagavatam class, you see. Or you continue with, you know, you're in the middle of one of Krishna's pastimes, you know. You're sitting down to take lunch with Krishna, and somebody's passing around the Gulab Jamuns, you know, the Mother Jasoda made, and you're waiting, pop on your mouth, and for some reason you snot out for a second. And you go through this whole thing. It goes on for all of eternity, it seems like. You know, millions of lifetimes and this and that. And finally you snap. Oh, there's the glove. They put the glove on your hand, and you pop it in your mouth. And you say, wow, Mother Jasoda's Gulab Jamuns are incomparable. You see? So it'll be like that. Prabhupada gives the example in a dream, even though it's only short, it seems to go on forever. You ever been chased by a tiger in a dream? It seems like it's going on forever, and you have lead in your feet, and you just can't, it's hopeless, but you just, it seems like it goes on forever, and someone's, Prabhu, what are you doing? They wake you up, oh, a nightmare. So a dream may seem to go on forever, although it's just like that. So we're in the conditioned state. It seems to go on forever. Therefore, it's an eternally conditioned. Millions and billions of uncountable lifetimes is going on and on and on and on. But when you come out of it, when you come back to pure bhakti, you realize, oh, I just had that weird dream. I don't know what was going on. But now it's time to go on Govardhan with Krishna. Okay, how does one transform quickly their greed from material sense objects for bhakti? What is the fast track to pure bhakti? That is the question. That is Lord Chaitanya's movement, you see. Chanting, dancing, and feasting. Take prasadam and sing and dance in ecstasy. That's the fast track. And Srimad Bhagavatam 1:15:34, Krishna says that he relieved the earth of its burden by withdrawing the Yadu dynasty. Seeing that the members of the Yadu dynasty are his devotees, why are they considered a burden to the earth? I heard one time the explanation that if they were to have stayed here as Krishna's family members, that dynasty would have become very, very proud. That we are the Krishna dynasty. And gradually it would have been corrupted. Their pride would have been... That's someone explained like that. I got to hurry now because time is running short and the questions keep coming in. Okay. Is that it? Okay. All right. How can a neophyte devotee like me be more enchanted by devotional service and less enchanted by Maya? Increase the intensity of your mood. Pray to Krishna more feelingly, my dear Lord, please save me from this enchantment with Maya and bless me, I can be enchanted by you and by you only. In this way, pray every day, very intensely, sincerely, and passionately, and Krishna will reciprocate. How can I be fully convinced that Maya will not satisfy me? You are not materially exhausted yet. And in this way, I can begin to give Krishna my exclusive devotion. How many lifetimes of being burned does it take? Pray like Kunti, Mother Kunti, Queen Kunti. Pray like Kunti, pray, my dear Lord, please put me into suffering. If you're not convinced, then beg Krishna to put you in a suffering condition to help you become convinced. Can attentive chanting save one from the trouble of offenses or fall down? Yes. Attentive chanting will save you. So chant attentively. How do we know if we are really feeling separation from Krishna or if it's just something else? Well, if you're really feeling separation from Krishna, you will not have any more infatuation with this material energy. That's a fact. If you're genuinely feeling Krishna's separation, no materials, you will desire Krishna and only Krishna, and nothing of this material world will attract you at all. If you're feeling the pang of separation from Krishna, someone says, oh, you're very unhappy, here, let me give you this or give you that, it won't satisfy you. Nothing of this material world will satisfy a person who is feeling genuine separation from Krishna. Nothing. Not money, not power, not sex life, nothing. Fame, nothing in this material world will phase or in any way interest a person who is genuinely feeling separation from Krishna. How to maintain the enthusiasm of devotional service and Krishna consciousness? Well, for me, it's easy. Prabhupada ordered me. When I was a young, I just got initiated, and I sent my dakshina in with a little note how I wanted to spread the movement, and Prabhupada wrote me the most wonderful letter back. He said, I can see you're very sincere. It's a letter from London. He said, I can see you're a very sincere, enthusiastic boy. Now continue enthusiastically as you were doing, and surely Krishna will bless you. So what is it? Is one supposed to take the order of the spiritual master as his life and soul, or is it an option? It's mandatory. Whatever order your spiritual master gives you, that is your life and soul. So Prabhupada ordered me to all be enthusiastic, and he gave me an impetus. You do so, Krishna will surely bless you. So I decided to follow Prabhupada's order. Do you think it worked? Did Krishna bless me? Well, he blessed me because I'm still here. That's the proof. After 41 years, I'm still here, chanting my rounds, following the principles as a member of ISKCON. That's the proof that Krishna's been blessing me for 41 years. So, it's not difficult if you just take it that Prabhupada is ordering me to always be enthusiastic. He didn't only want Sankarshan Das to be enthusiastic. He wants every ISKCON member to be enthusiastic. And he promises, I'm sure he would not object if I said that his promise applies to every ISKCON member. He would not, I know the Prabhupada would not object if I took his letter that he wrote me and said it, and I say that it applies to all devotees. Prabhupada would say yes. He would go like this. Yes. It applies to every ISKCON devotee. If you will always be enthusiastic, Krishna will surely bless you. So try it. Prabhupada wants you to always be enthusiastic. So just try it. When you don't feel enthusiastic, just pick yourself up and be enthusiastic. I don't feel like it. Well, do it anyway. And you know what? The soul is always enthusiastic. So as soon as you put yourself into the enthusiastic mode, you'll become reconnected with the spirit soul, you see. You become reconnected with your spiritual nature and disconnected from your covering called the material false ego, you see. So anyway, so I thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Raja Vijayashimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Now, something came up, and I have a request from a Temple president in Cape Town. Normally, we wait till we have a number of disciples qualified for initiation, recommended by the local authorities before we initiate. So this very nice bhakti here, Juma from Cape Town, his Temple president recommended it for initiation, and I said, well, let me wait until I have a few more disciples here in South Africa. I have some meeting ready for second. He said, no, it's an emergency. Please initiate him immediately. Give him the name and the beads right now on this visit because we need him to be initiated in our temple. We need him to be initiated. So I said, okay, I surrender to the ISKCON authority. All right, I'll do it. Even though I'd rather wait because it's nicer to have every a group of disciples at one time. So today I chanted on his beads and I'm giving him his name and he'll sit for a yajna later on. So this is Bhakta Juma from Cape Town, and now I'm going to given initiation without the yajna. So someone can put his on his neck beads for here. Madhava, you put on his neck bead. Hare, not everyone can chant to purify. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. So now about the gentleman, go down and offer your dandavats to Prabhupada. The deities are closed, but still he can do to the deities. The microphone went dead for some reason. So, Bhakta Juma, what are the four regulative principles?
No intoxication, gambling.
Speak loudly, I'm deaf.
No intoxication, gambling, illicit sex, meat eating, fish or eggs.
Okay, come this side here so the stand is in the way. Okay. So, and how many rounds do you chant every day?
16.
Only 16?
Huh? 16 rounds.
At least 16.
At least 16.
Okay. So your name is Dhritavrata Das. Dhritavrata means one who has fixed in his vow. So you must be very, you've taken a vow now to chant at least 16 rounds every day in front of Prabhupada, Vaishnavas, and Guru. You've taken this vow and to follow these four regular principles. Now you must never deviate throughout your whole life. In this way you will live up to your name. You are Dhritavrata, one who is fixed in his determination. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Now you can collect some. Now you can collect some dakshina. Here's your people. Hi, Hare Krishna. Now you collect some dakshina from all the devotees. That's what you have to. You hold your kirta like this, and you collect some dakshina. You have to become a beggar.